No, not every single one of my tanks look good all the time. You know, everyone has their issues. And I added an urchin, which is eating some of the macro algae instead of the hair algae, of course. I might have to remove him. But yeah, once I get the hair algae under control, I'd like to add a couple more macro algae. Not even entirely sure where the hell hair algae came from. But it's probably because, you know, I just waited too long to do a water change on this tank. So,
what's up, reef fanatics? Welcome to the Coral Reef Talk podcast. And of course, I am joined by Levi Peterson in today's episode. And Levi, today we are jumping into your world of aquariums because you have quite a bit of aquariums going on. So we're going to take a look at each and every single one of your aquariums and kind of talk about just what you have going on. I mean, from a deep sea reef to a Caribbean tank, I mean, you got some really specific animals that you like to keep. So get us started. Let's jump right in.
Yeah, for sure. So first off, the deep water tank, I recently set it up about, 2 months ago. It's actually the one that's behind me right here. It's one of my favorite tanks. I've always liked non-photosynthetic corals simply just because, you know, you don't need super expensive equipment, you know, like lights specifically to make them look good. You could just pretty much use any little standard LED light to make them look good. But this tank specifically, a lot of these corals come from like 100-foot plus. So this tank does not get any light. Like at all, unless I'm taking pictures.
Okay.
Or if the light's on in the room, it gets a little, you know. But other than that, it really doesn't get much light. A lot of the fish that I put in there too are collected at these depths, like 100 feet plus, so they don't see as much light. You get some light down there, but probably just gets just about enough from the window. But yeah, I mean, it's just super different and it's unique, and I like unique things, obviously.
Yeah. So with this tank, not getting a lot of light. What light do you have going on right here in this photo?
So this is just the light I have on top of it that I use when I'm like taking photographs and stuff to showcase some of the colors. It's just a little LED strip that's in a little housing. Just has a switch turning on and off. But yeah, like I said, I just use it for pictures just to kind of show off some of the colors and what I got going on in there. I got a few sun corals, orange, yellow, and you can kind of see the black sun coral in there. Few different sponges. I think the next step for this tank is filling in the gaps between the gorgonians with some other cup corals and some more sponges, you know, to kind of fill in the gaps and cover up that white rock. Yeah. And I may even add a few more gorgonians to kind of fill out the bottom half of the tank. But yeah, I mean, the rock work, Elizabeth actually did the rock in this tank, and I really like the way she did it. Is I was just picturing a lot of gorgs on it because it was just, there's a lot of area, you know, to place corals. So it ended up working out really nice. So it's one of my favorite tanks, and I'm super glad the way that it's turning out currently. It's just...
Yeah, I mean, all the different colors you have in there, and the aquascape is great. So she did an awesome job. But with corals and stuff coming from like 100-plus feet deep, is there like a pressure change that you have to worry about typically, like when you're catching these animals?
So with the corals specifically, you really don't have to worry about that. But a lot of the fish, you got to do some like depressurization because obviously, like if you've ever been fishing in like 100 or more feet and you reel up a fish real fast, their swim bladder is going to quite literally come out of their body pretty much. So you got to find a good diver or a good source that collects these respectfully and knows what they're doing, and they can like handle these fish properly to make sure they're healthy because otherwise you're going to get some fish that may look okay now, but they have some internal issues that were caused during the depressurization, and it's going to cause issues down the road. And a lot of these fish at these depths, like, you know, they're not cheap because you got divers going down 100 feet plus, which is can be quite dangerous, especially when you're trying to, like, pretty much work at those depths.
Right.
So a lot of people, like, they avoid this side of the hobby because they say it can be super expensive, which it can because you got to feed a lot of the fish. If you're looking to kind of go for a biotope type feeling, they're going to be more expensive because they're coming from deeper depths. But just about everything in here is from the Caribbean. I've even hand collected some of these gorgonians, but the sun corals are from the Indo-Pacific. And there is a Chile coral and my Paramenabia in there. That is about all there is from the Indo-Pacific. That is a red whip gorg from the Atlantic. Super cool. Different. It's red with bright white polyps. It's actually super easy to keep. This thing's growing quite rapidly. It had probably half the amount of branches when I first got it. And it's growing really well. If you look kind of close at the tips, you can kind of see like the brighter orange is kind of new growth.
Okay.
So it's doing really well. When I first put it in the tank, it didn't look good at all. And I kind of messed with the flow. And I try to, when you're placing these in the system, you want to kind of look at the Gorgonian and kind of picture where it would have been in the wild, you know, as far as the flow goes. So it was kind of angled and kind of cupping towards the, like, a different angle. So I turned it around and it ended up opening up and it's doing super well. Another thing with this tank is nutrient control. I kind of went with a little different approach to this system because I'd always deal with super high nutrients no matter what I did. So I actually, when I plumbed the system myself and kind of did my own little sump, I have no filter sock whatsoever. So the food is constantly, like, even if it gets sucked in the overflow, it's recirculating like 24/7. So all I have to do pretty much is just weekly water changes, keep the nitrates as low as possible. But you're always going to have higher nutrients in these systems, so you got no choice, really. Algae scrubbers can help, but with this system, I've taken a little different approach, you know, doing water changes and just kind of letting the food and the corals do their thing. So far, everything's been doing super well for me.
Okay, so. Very cool. So with these water changes, then, are you keeping up on that schedule, like, constantly making sure you're doing water changes the same day every week or every couple weeks or whatever?
Yeah, every Friday this gets a 50%.
Okay, very cool. And also this deep water, so you're keeping this at a cooler temperature as well, right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. 68. I try to keep it at 68.
So you spoke in a previous episode about getting certain fish for this tank. What fish do you have in there now, and what other fish are you planning on getting?
So right now I have a pygmy cherub angel. They're actually quite common. They come from usually about like 150 foot. So you see those more often in the hobby. I have a couple orangeback basses. I got a pair of those in there. They're really cool. I'll be talking a little bit here in a second about those. And then a wrasse bass, which is a really cool bassinet that's really rare. You don't see them too often and they're quite expensive, but they are very pretty. So nice. Hoping here soon to add some rough tongue antheus. They're quite rare. You hardly ever see them in the hobby and they're also very expensive, but I happen to know someone. So hopefully it happens here soon. I'm super excited.
So with you being the oddball reefer and into this deep sea reef tank that you got going on, the deep sea tank, I figured it would be a good idea to play a deep sea quiz. So the Monterey Bay Aquarium put out a questionnaire or quiz. It's like 31 questions to see if we can name these deep sea animals. So usually when we play a game, it's like I'm throwing questions at you or vice versa. Today we can actually do it together. So the first one, this is a deep sea cephalopod. It has two unique photoreceptors on its mantle, as well as a delicate webbing connecting its rubbery tentacles. Do we even need the multiple choice? Do you know what this is?
Vampire squid.
Yes, I was going to say vampire squid. Let's see. Do they tell us right away? Yeah, correct. Yes.
Only reason I know that is I've seen multiple videos about those on like Facebook and stuff before.
Mm-hmm.
They're really cool.
Yeah. Let's see. The vampire squid has a soft body, passive creature. Instead of blood, it feeds on marine snow, dead and decaying plant and animal material drifting down from the surface. So fun fact.
Good stuff.
Don't know if I'm going to read all the fun facts, but let's take a look at the next one. So this is a slow and spooky crustacean that feeds on dead animals and can withstand depths of over 7,000 feet. I mean, this is probably too deep to put in your tank.
I've seen them. I've pet one before.
Oh, have you? Okay. Yeah. So is this A, a giant isopod, B, an armored sea bug, C, a seafloor rumba, D, a benthic roly-poly?
I mean, it kind of could almost be all of the above, but it is a giant isopod.
Isopod, yeah.
Which, I mean, it's technically a bug also, too, which is kind of funny.
Well, and these are also kept in, like, they're really, really cold waters, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Super cold because they're super deep. But, yeah, they can grow up to 16 inches. Wow. Yeah, they look kind of creepy there. All right. Known mostly for having the largest leg span of any crustacean, up to 12 feet. This creature's long limbs help it scale large obstacles on the seafloor. So is this
Japanese
A?
Spider crab.
Japanese spider crab, right to it. D. Yes. I don't know. Is this going to get harder? I've seen this picture before. The unique look of this animal comes from its telescopic eyes, which can move independently while this creature orients its body in a different direction. A, the smoocher shark. B, the barrel eye fish. C, crystal ball fish. Or D, the shield-faced looky-loo. Do you know the name of this one?
I do. Let's see if you do, though. Let's see what you got.
Yeah, let's see if I do. I really don't know. I'm going to have to say it's either B or C. Dude, man, putting me on the spot. Crystal ball fish would be a cool name. I'm going to say B, barrel eye fish.
Yep.
Yeah, awesome. The barrel eye fish stands out as one of the most bizarre. Imagine being able to see out of your own forehead.
Crazy.
That is pretty crazy. All right, let's do a few more here.
Ironically, at the depths where this jelly lives, it's nearly invisible to predators. In the darkness of the deep sea, animals that are red appear black and blend into the dark background.
All right. So is this A, strawberry jam jelly, B, bloody belly comb jelly, C, beating heart jelly, or D, the forbidden sea candy?
This one's challenging. I think it's definitely B or C. And the beating heart would make sense because it's like this picture, it's shaped like a heart. But it also looks like a species of comb jelly to me.
Okay. See, let me take a look at the question again. It's nearly invisible. Red appears black, and it blends into the dark.
I'd say beating heart jelly.
Beating heart.
Because, I mean, bloody belly comb jelly just sounds like a little too much.
You think so?
I think it's just descriptive.
Yeah. I was thinking strawberry jam jelly at one point, but we'll go beating heart jelly. That sounds pretty cool. Let's see. Hey,
wow. I actually got it. That was a challenging one.
The bloody belly comb jelly. This species has only recently come to the attention of scientists thanks to images like this, supplied by the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute. Wow. Bloody belly comb jelly. Interesting. All right. I think we know what this is right off the bat.
Yeah, let's just... Yeah.
That's an anglerfish. The males are tiny. Yep. Yep. Anglerfish right off the bat. All right. We're going to do... three more. The females of this species have a huge mouths and elastic stomachs, which allow them to eat prey far larger than their bodies. Flabby whale fish, red worm fish, small-eyed spine fish, or crimson misnomer. Misnomer, right?
Yeah.
Wow, I can't read tonight for some reason.
It's got to be either... I don't think it's a red worm fish. No. A or D, maybe? Flabby whale fish is too much. I might have to go with D.
You're going D?
Yeah.
You're going D, crimson misnomer. I'm gonna go C. We'll select D though. We'll select your answer. Oh,
what?
The flabby whale fish.
Really? No way.
Not horrible. We've only missed two so far. All right, so that's quite a name for a fish just over a foot long, but it's no fluke. To the deep sea explorers that discovered this bizarre animal, the whale fish large mouth and teeny tiny eyes made it look enough like a more lengthy leviathan for the odd name to stick.
Yeah, that's an odd name, all right.
The flabby whale fish.
Where'd they get whale fish from?
Just because I guess when it opened its mouth, it looked bigger than it was, I guess.
Huh, strange. Interesting.
Yeah, really weird.
Learn something new every day.
That's right. All right, last question, number 15. You know what this is? Fangtooth. You want to read the question for him real quick?
When a fish or shrimp swims nearby, the fish simply opens its big mouth and sucks the animal inside. Animals caught in its trap have little chance of wriggling free.
Nice. So we're saying fangtooth B. And that's the correct answer, the fangtooth.
We got to do one more.
One more? All right, one more. Let's see if it's a weird one.
Oh.
Do you have an idea?
Yeah.
You do? Already? Yes. All right. Grows where hot, mineral-laden waters flows out of the deep sea floor. Unlike most animals, they don't eat. Instead, bacteria living in their guts transform sulfur into energy for them. Is it A, a lipstick cluster worm, B, bloody pipe organ worms, C, giant tube worms, or D, lung coral?
C.
Giant tube worms.
They're very similar to, like, feather dusters.
Uh-huh.
And, like, cocoa worms. They're just giant.
Yeah? So you don't think the red... part of these worms give it a different name?
I mean, maybe.
And you don't think it could be a lipstick cluster worm?
I'm going with giant tube worms. You can choose, right?
All right, giant tube worms. See, there you go.
Sweet.
Trying to get in your head there.
You tried.
Miles below the ocean surface, the giant tube worms live off of bacteria that thrive on chemicals billowing out of the Earth's crust. All right, so that was our quiz segment. There's still more questions, so maybe we'll jump back into this quiz in a future episode and continue it on or something.
Definitely. All right. So as you guys know, each week in December, we've been doing a little giveaway, kind of sharing some products with the hobby. So today we have some products brought to you by Two Little Fishies. We have a Nano Mag. mixed sea veggies, great for tangs, angels, and gonio power. This is a very popular product, you know, for a lot of corals and feeding them. So to win these products here, all you have to do, it's very simple. You just got to comment on the YouTube video, I love two little fishies, and you'll be randomly selected. It's all randomized, and we will get you these products. So,
well, cool. So from the deep sea now, which is Caribbean corals, you also have another tank that is Caribbean themed as well. And that is your 75 gallon tank. Let's explore and talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, let's explore a little shallower.
Yeah. What do we got?
All right. So this is my Caribbean tank. It looks like it's a mess, which it kind of is. There's a lot of things going on. A lot of gorgonians, there's a decent amount of fish in there, algaes, invertebrates, shrimps, starfish. The cool thing about this tank is a lot of it I actually collected, which is also pretty cool, you know, just to kind of see something and know that you actually literally handpicked that stuff from the ocean. And we're blessed enough, you know, to have that option, you know, if we wanted to, you know, go get our own stuff, which is pretty cool. But yeah, a lot of these gorgs and polyps I collected, along with some of the starfish, sea cucumbers, serpent stars, and even a couple of the fish, and even algae. So it's always cool, you know, like I said, to look at something that you kind of, you know, handpicked yourself. But with this specific tank, I wanted to mimic a certain area that I really enjoy snorkeling in the Keys, which is kind of like a shallow flat bottom reef with like a limestone bottom. You get a little sand that kind of covers it up. There's not really much of any rock work. It's just kind of flat. And you get like your gorgonians, algaes, lots of different kinds of invertebrates and fish. But every so often at this spot, you know, you'd come upon a little boulder and there'd be a bunch of fish hanging around it. And that's where you'd find like zoanthids and sponges and all that sort of stuff. So it's kind of like a little oasis. So if you look from the right to the left, it kind of went from like a flat bottom and then you find a little boulder with just full of life, which is kind of like what it's like in the wild. So that's kind of what I went for. Eventually, I cracked down and added some rock to the right just to create some more space for some gorgonians. And I was starting to add some more fish and kind of was going for something a little different to add some more gobies and stuff. Because originally, I had some larger fish like bluehead wrasse, some larger angels and stuff. And I wanted to kind of downgrade and add more fish, but just in smaller sizes so I could house more. Yeah, so cool. I wanted to create a little more area for them to hide out and camp out.
Very cool. So how often are you just relaxing and just watching your reef aquarium?
This one is in the living room, so I sit back and watch it quite a bit.
Awesome.
I mean, a lot of the times when, you know, I'm supposed to be watching a movie with Elizabeth, I tend to, you know, just kind of stare at the tank sometimes.
Yeah, you kind of just gaze off and start watching the reef.
And then I start thinking of things and just talking to myself pretty much. Oh, I need to add this. And then she like, look at me, you know, what is going on? You're not even watching the movie. But yeah. So,
nice.
Okay, so this is a giant split pour. I collected this down in the Keys. It's a unique gorgonian. It's giant. It has giant polyps and has a giant base. And this picture was taken about 2 years ago, and it's almost double the size now. And it's it's weird. It was growing straight. And then it's like growing to the side. It's so weird. I don't know. It's strange. I figured it would just grow straight up, but I don't know if the flow is kind of affecting its growth because this tank does have quite a bit of flow. I don't know. It's just a very strange octocoral. And then this is kind of my Zoa garden. Lots of Zoas. These are all Caribbean. So most of them I've actually collected. I started off with a couple polyps and they've taken off. I have no idea. A lot of people for some reason can't keep them. I don't know if it's because this tank runs a little higher nutrients most of the time. I don't know if that affects them or not, but they do really well for me and they grow rapidly. So this picture is probably 2 months ago and this whole area on top of the rock is just full of Zoas. So it's pretty crazy, but really cool.
Yeah, it's looking great. What do we got here?
This little guy. So I put two of these in the tank probably about a year ago. And now I probably have like five or six of them. I don't know where they came from unless they hitchhiked on a couple of the newer gorgs. But they're really cool. I've had really great success keeping them. I've had multiple ones for a couple of years now. Doing totally fine. They just kind of filter feed. They're really cool. They open up like this and they just kind of, you know, grab food out of the water column. Super interesting creatures. And with this tank specifically, I try to go with as much diversity as I can because the more diverse your tank is, you know, the better off it's going to be because everything plays a role. So, I mean, I probably have almost 400 snails in there. There's a bunch of seas, different species of emerald crabs, or, well, clinging crabs, or whatever you want to call them, hermit crabs, shrimps, starfish, all that sort of good stuff. So I just like to keep my tanks as diverse as I possibly can. And this tank gets one or two water changes every year, maybe.
Every, what'd you say, year?
Yeah.
One or two a year? Okay.
Yeah, so very nice. Everything does amazing in here. I have an algae scrubber, so it keeps the nutrients rather controlled pretty well. Yeah, I really have no issues with this tank whatsoever. So.
Awesome. Yeah, well, all the different macro algaes you got in there and stuff is pulling in that nutrients for them to grow. You got all those snails doing their job.
Yep. You can look around, each, like even during the daytime, there's a bunch of snails on the glass. And if you turn the lights off and come back in like an hour, the whole like glass is just covered. It's pretty crazy.
So your main thing that you're focused on then with this tank for someone who's looking at setting up a tank like this, getting gorgonians, macroalgae and stuff. So you're focused what on like keeping your salinity in the right spot, keeping that temperature at the right spot?
Yeah, salinity, temperature. I monitor the pH pretty regularly in this tank, but for the most part, it's relatively stable. It drops a little bit at night, but you can always, you know, counter that with some kalkwasser dosing.
Yeah.
Which is what I do on this system. And everything stays really stable. This tank is coming up on 3 years here soon. So pretty proud of what's happened with the tank and how what's changed and what's doing good. It's doing excellent. I can't complain. And I'm keeping corals that I've never really been able to keep before. I got a couple acros, even on the back rack. You can see a little acro. It's growing like a weed. Nice. I got a couple prides that are doing really good. My worm rocks are doing excellent. So, I mean, it's pretty cool, you know, and I really don't touch this tank much other than maybe scrub a little algae off the glass or remove some algae from the algae scrubber, change the socks, you know, just general maintenance other than water changes pretty much. And it's doing amazing. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So for someone who's looking to get into the hobby that maybe has been told like keeping an aquarium is difficult or hard, like if you have a tank like this, or maybe a soft coral tank, it depends on what type of tank you're looking at getting, right? Mm-hmm. Because not every aquarium has to be difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
You're only changing the water in this a couple times a year, whereas some people change on a weekly schedule. So it just depends on what you're trying to keep. So that's really cool. And for someone looking at gorgonians, what would you say, they're easy to keep, or it depends on the gorgonian, or like how do you look at those as far as care level?
I mean, it really depends on the gorgonian. All these in here, except for a couple, are photosynthetic. So they grow with the light. Really easy to keep. Obviously, non-photosynthetic is a whole different avenue. Yeah, gorgonians are some of the easiest corals, octocorals, to grow. I mean, they grow like crazy, and they do like a little more nutrients in the water. Because I noticed when I first put the algae scrubber on this tank, all the corals looked terrible. And I don't know if they were used to some of the higher nutrients. And then once I had the algae scrubber, it was just removing more than ever. So the gorgonians, you know, I think it took time to get used to it.
Yeah,
everything's doing amazing now. So
awesome. I just want to thank our channel sponsor for the podcast, and that is Printed Reef. Printed Reef is providing 3D printed solutions for your reef aquarium. And they do that by providing things like the sand stand and these coral holders and even mushroom cages like this. And they have many more products to offer you over at printedreef.com. And if you're a subscriber to the Coral Reef Talk, you can go over to printedreef.com/thecoralreeftalk and use the discount code to save 10% off your purchase. So you can use the code the Coral Reef Talk at checkout, and that is going to save you 10% off of your Printed Reef products. The link and the discount code will be down in the description below or the show notes here on the podcasting platform. If you're watching this on the video podcast, you'll be able to see the products that I'm holding up right now. If you're listening, check out the show notes for more information. And so those are your two bigger tanks, right? Your deep sea and your Caribbean reef there. But you also have some smaller tanks as well. Do you want to jump into this?
Let's do it.
All right. So walk us through. Let's see if I can get to the right slide here. What we're looking at here.
All right. So pardon the mess, but this is the shelf, I call it. Up top, I got a little macroalgae tank, you know, just with a couple different macroalgaes and some invertebrates. There's no fish or anything in that currently. That's the mangrove tank at the bottom. It's actually, I have it in brackish water, but the mangroves, I actually got those as little propagules.
Okay.
And they've grown like crazy. And you can even see, I'm super excited about this. Some of the roots, you know, are starting to intertwine, and it's starting to look like they do, you know, when you go to the beach and you see mangroves. I mean,
oh yeah,
very roots nice. Are literally shooting out and starting to grow down and up. It's pretty cool to see. So that's, I have a couple little ghost shrimp in there that kind of hang around. And then if you look closely in the middle, I have a little like diffuser type thing. It kind of, you know, makes it like, I don't know what you call it, foggy. So when I have guests over, you know, make it look cool with some fog.
Oh, okay, like it's misting over the top.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And the other tank, let's see, this is the macroalgae tank. I got some hair algae in it right now, so I added some Fosban, and I just did a water change. No, not every single one of my tanks look good all the time. You know, everyone has their issues. And I added an urchin, which is eating some of the macroalgae instead of the hair algae, of course. I might have to remove him. But yeah, once I get this hair algae under control, I'd like to add a couple more macroalgae. Not even entirely sure where the hell hair algae came from. But it's probably because, you know, I just waited too long to do a water change on this tank. So
yeah, that can happen. Yeah. And then,
up next, this is a newer tank. This is Elizabeth's tank.
Yep.
She has a couple, I can't remember the name of them. I think they're called like Black Storm Clowns.
Okay.
And she has two neon gobies. There's another fish in there. It's like a leopard puffer. It's a toby puffer, but it's like a leopard print. It's really cool. I wish I had a picture of it, but it hides all the time. Some bounce mushrooms, a couple other different corals, green star polyps, chestnut snails. She has a little bubble tip anemone. But she got this at Aquashella in Daytona. And so it's only been set up for a month.
Okay.
And I mean, tank's relatively new. You got a little diatoms going on, and the fish are given to her. So, I mean, we had no choice but to put them in there. Otherwise, yeah. I would have waited a little longer. But everything's doing great. Fish are happy. Corals are happy. Bubble tip's happy. It's doing really good. Nice. So, yeah. So she's excited. She has her own little kind of thing that she can take care of, you know, and feel involved, you know.
Yeah,
so.
For sure. Super cool. It's looking like a pretty good setup there. What's her plans for it, or is it just
she wants more coral? She doesn't like the way the corals look right now because there's just not much in it. But you know that comes with time.
Yep.
But the corals she does have in it are doing really well. If you look on the bottom left, you got a couple sun-kissed bounce mushrooms. Those are doing well. She has a couple other mushrooms. She just likes really colorful things. Okay. So the light that I have on this tank is actually the freshwater blade light. Because originally, where this tank was sitting, I had the mangrove tank. So I had the mangroves growing under that light. So I might here soon switch it out to like a coral grow AI blade. That way, you know, the corals will pop a little better and she can turn the blues way up and check out the corals and appreciate them a little more. But yeah, this tank's doing really good. So
awesome. Very cool. And then before we get to our scientific segment though, how often are you changing the water on all of these tanks or with these guys?
With these tanks on the shelf, the top one I was doing once a month and I'm back to doing it once a week because it was doing really well when I was just doing it once a week. So I kind of, you know, slacked off a little bit because the algae wasn't really growing. And I didn't know if that was just because of the lack of nutrients. So I slacked off and then the hair algae came. So I'm back at it again. But all these other tanks get water changes weekly other than the mangrove. Okay. I didn't really highlight the fourth tank on there just because there's not much of anything in it right now. It's right above the mangroves right there.
Okay.
There's just a little calerpa in there. And that's about it. I'm still deciding exactly what I want to do with it. Maybe some cool invertebrate that you can't keep with something else or something like a little mantis shrimp or something down the road. But yeah.
I know where you can get a mantis shrimp.
Oh, yeah. I saw your post.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have a mantis shrimp that popped up in our aquarium. So, I mean, if I can catch him, I'm not sure if we want him in there or not yet. So,
well, when you decide, let me know. I'll take him. I'll do it.
Sounds cool. All right.
Mantis shrimp are fun.
Yeah. I mean, we might have a couple, but I mean, I've yet to share that. I guess I've shared that now if you're listening here on the podcast. But yeah, very cool. So for someone who's looking to get into nano tanks with having all of these aquariums, what's like one main piece of advice, I guess, that you would give to that person looking at smaller tanks?
I definitely say salinity is probably the most important thing because it's a smaller system. And when your water evaporates, your salt levels will climb rather quickly because you just don't have the water volume. Excuse me. And then water changes, I would say, you know, keep keep up with your water changes. And it also really, like, it depends on what you're keeping in the system too. Like some, like the algae, you know, I thought like slacking off on the water changes would help, you know, the algae grow, and it obviously didn't really. It just caused some more issues. You just want to keep in mind what you're keeping, kind of judge it that way. But I always, if you can, you know, just keep up on your maintenance, do your water changes. It's not going to hurt. It always helps. And just keep that in mind, you know, when keeping the outtank. Salinity, water changes, and just, you know, the water changes with the smaller tanks will help with your additives as well. Because most people, I mean, you're not going to be dosing really on a smaller tank unless you want to add a big giant doser to it. You know, it's just going to look big and bulky. So you kind of, you know, when you're going for nano look, you want, you know, the simplest looking tank, you know. So that way, the best way to, you know, add your additives is to keep up with your water changes and keep the water fresh.
Awesome. Well, those are some legit looking tanks that you got there. It's pretty awesome.
Thank you.
How many tanks is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 tanks?
I got 8. I just didn't highlight them because I'm not, you know, I haven't really said much about them yet on my personal accounts. So
that's right. That's right. 8. So yeah, it's a lot of tanks going on.
It's a lot.
But I mean, if you're super passionate like you are about the hobby, I mean, having all these tanks, no problem at all. So jumping.
I got problems. Hair algae. You got problems.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, no problem as far as like you have the time for these. So
you're
making sure you have the right amount of time to put towards each one of them, even if some of them give you some problems like the green hair algae up there at the top, but you're on top of it for sure. So jumping right to it, the last thing on our list, or one of the last things we got for today, is our scientific segment that you bring to us each and every week.
Yes. And
this guy coming up is a pretty cool looking fish. Tell us more about him.
All right. So we have the orangeback bass this week. A lot of people, if they do see these, you know, they automatically think, oh, it's a lantern bass. No, it's not. It looks very similar. I'll give it that to them, but it has some different markings. It has like 2 orange dots right behind its eye. That's kind of, you know, a really distinctive look. And then it has a little more orange to it and a totally different pattern, but it does have some similarities. Serranus annularis, the orangeback bass, comes from deeper reefs, you know, anywhere from 60 to 150, you know, around that range. They're rather somewhat common at that depth, but you don't really see them in a hobby too often because I think, like I first mentioned, that they look so similar to lantern bass, and lantern bass are a lot cheaper and more available that you see those more in the hobby. But these do rarely make it into the hobby, and when they do, you know, they go pretty quick. I have a pair in the deep reef. They're some of my favorite fish, and I could go into a lot more depth in explaining the species, but I do have a Reef Builders article out, so go check that out. We could probably maybe figure out a way to share the link to at some point. But I have a whole bunch of information about them on there too. So yeah, just a unique Serranus genus fish that's different, you know, that you don't see too often.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, we'll definitely share that article in the show notes or in the description down below for sure. And one more question. When it comes to having all of these aquariums and all of these tanks, what are you checking more? Are you keeping up on like the different parameters that we should be testing for? Are you judging things based on eyesight? Like how are you checking your tank and making sure that, oh, something looks off here, let me test this, or my nitrates are out of control? How often do you do all that?
So me personally, I mean, you can call me lazy if you want, but I do test my tanks usually every other week or so, but I'm more of an eyesight reefer, you know. My corals and fish will tell me if something's wrong, you know, and if I do notice something, I'm testing it right away, trying to make sure and figure out that problem. But I don't usually have much of any issues other than, you know, getting hair algae that's telling me, you know, that there's excess nutrients that needs to be handled. But yeah, I mean, I kind of just let the tank, you know, explain like, hey, like something's going on, like fix me, you know. That's kind of, you know, the way I am. But if I have some extra time on my hands, I'll go around and test every tank. But when you have 8 tanks, you know, it takes quite a bit of time. So
yeah,
I'm definitely more of an eyesight reefer.
All right, cool. Yeah, and that's something that I've learned in my experience as well, is that your tank is going to tell you if there's issues going on. If you have like LPS corals or something, they're going to start to close up or retract. Well, you know something's going on. There's different things that you can see in your aquarium, like green hair algae starting to grow. So you can get a lot of information just by looking at your aquarium. So if you're looking at your aquarium enough, so you know what it looks like on a good day, you know what it looks like on a bad day, then basing that information on what you see is really going to tell you a lot. And of course, testing your tank, especially if you test it routinely, you can definitely plot out like with a graph and stuff to know if your nutrients and stuff is going up and down. But yeah, definitely judging it by eyesight is a way to do it as well. So thank you so much for checking out this episode of the Coral Reef Talk podcast. We hope you learned something today. Thank you, Levi, for taking us through all of your aquariums.
No problem.
It was a lot of fun checking out each and every one. A lot of unique corals, gorgonians, fish. I mean, you got a lot of oddball stuff going on that's unique and different. And so it's always fun to take a look at that. But as always, make sure you are subscribed to the Coral Reef Talk. You're following and listening to us wherever you get your podcast. Thank you again for watching the video podcast or listening. Remember to like, comment, and subscribe, and we will see you in the next one.
See ya.